content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Amy Wentley for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the J.C. Ralston Arboretum website and from a magazine called In Her Garden. That is a periodical. It comes out 4 times a year, so once a season. It's from the Stampington and Company Publishing House. So we will be starting today with some announcements of what's going on at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh, North Carolina. There is an in-person air layering camellias workshop. It's on Saturday, May 2nd from 9:30 to 11 a.m. This workshop is led by Stuart Clayman. He became a master gardener in 2014. He is a member of the Virginia Camellia Society, and he volunteers at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum. The cost for the session is $50. If you love a camellia in your garden so much you wish you had another just like it, air layering makes that possible. It's a propagation technique that allows you to clone a mature plant so that captures its exact bloom color, form, and charm without having to wait years for a seedling to catch up. So join us for that Saturday, May 2nd, 9:30 to 11, an air layering camellias workshop. There's also a plant lovers tour in person at the Arboretum on Tuesday, May 5th, 2026, from 9 to 10. This plant lovers tour is on Mexican plants, and it is offered by one of our curators, Dennis Carey. And let's see. We love the resilience and beauty that a diverse landscape can bring, and we thought this Cinco de Mayo that we'd take you around the garden and show you some of our favorite Mexican plants. So that, again, is Tuesday, May 5th, 9 to 11. It is free to JCRA members and $5 for non-members. For the midweek program, which is offered online, that is available on the J.C. Ralston Arboretum's YouTube channel. It is free. It is Wednesday, May 6th, 3 to 4. Every Wednesday, there is a midweek program. The one for Wednesday, May 6th is Perennials. It's by Tim Alderton, who is a research technician at the Arboretum. Planting annuals year after year is a labor of love, but the flourish of color you get as they come into bloom makes all of that effort worth it. But what if some of the plants you were sold as annuals aren't actually annuals at all? What if the plants you've been pulling out at the end of the growing season would actually come back next year on your own if only you knew to leave them be? So Tim will let us know which kinds of flowers those are. Again, it's free. It's online, Wednesday, May 6th, 3 to 4. And then we have a hands-on workshop, Gardening in Containers. It's in person. It's with Bryce Lane. He is an alumni and a distinguished undergraduate professor emeritus and lecturer emeritus at the Department of Horticulture Science at NC State University. I personally have had classes with him before. He is amazing. You should go. It's Saturday, May 16th from 9 to 12:30. Bryce will be talking about container gardens. They will have containers and plants and dirt and everything you need, along with tons of information on how to grow things in containers. So again, that is Saturday, May 16th, 9 to 12:30. I know there is a fee for it. Unfortunately, I don't have that for you. So check out the JCRA website for more information. And the last thing I will advertise is a backyard barbecue Cost of that is $25 per person. We'll be celebrating 50 years with the North Carolina's Green Industry and Horticulture. Sunday, May 17th, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Celebrate 50 years of growing together. You will have a classic barbecue dinner, local beer and cider, time to reconnect with longtime colleagues and friends, opportunities to make new connections, and fellowship surrounded by the beauty of JCRA. So that is it for the J.C. Ralston Arboretum for the next couple of weeks. So here is an article called Love, Loss, and What I Grew. It's by Lynn Windmeyer. And I'll tell you a little bit about Lynn. Lynn Windmeyer is a flower farmer and a florist in Northwest Missouri. She designs floral arrangements for her clients and events, and she sells wholesale stems to florists. All of this happens on her husband's maternal grandfather's original home place, dating back to 1868. She has taken over the former dairy's milk barn and turned it into her studio just steps from their home. Tim and Lynn are raising four children, too many farm cats, and a farm dog named Gus in an idyllic setting they have aptly named Home Place Fields. Visit their website at homeplacefields.com or find them on Instagram and Facebook at Home Place Fields to see her work and learn more about their family and farm. Okay, here we go. Love, Loss, and What I Grew by Lynn Windmeyer. I grew up just outside of the city limits of a small town in a pink brick house. We had not one, not two, but three gardens. My parents both grew up on farms, so they did their best to create a farm-like oasis in our suburbia-style neighborhood. Our gardens were always full of vegetables, except for the strawberry patch by Dad's shed and Mom's flower beds, which mostly contained rose bushes. Roses were her favorite. While I loved digging for potatoes as if I were hunting for Easter eggs in the middle of summer, gardening didn't appeal to me much at the time. However, when I had the chance to arrange my mother's roses or lilacs into a centerpiece for our kitchen table, my perception of gardening began to shift. Of all the ways my mom cared for our family, sewing was the main thing she spent time teaching. Being a thrifty person, when we would be out shopping, she would often take a quick glance at the price tag and say, "We can make that." In addition, I often struggled to find clothes I had pictured in my mind. Mom's sewing lessons came in handy as I attempted to bring my ideas to life. Fashion design appeared to be the obvious path for me. I began studying textiles and apparel at a university in Middle America, and then I studied fashion abroad in London for a semester. I was chasing the dream, but I learned quickly that my path would not be a conventional one. While I was studying abroad, I read an article in a magazine about a woman working with a tribe in Africa, helping them use their beading talents to create beautiful bags that could be sold elsewhere to sustain their people. A seed was planted. That following spring, the cute Midwestern farm boy I had been dating took a leap of faith to an East African country, committing to spend 6 months teaching farming techniques in a starving, war-torn land. My goodbye tears began to water that seed. His six-month commitment turned into years, and a couple of Decembers later, that seed finally began to sprout along with our long-distance relationship. The following spring, it was time for me to visit his new stomping grounds. Upon arrival, I was greeted by the biggest bouquet of sunset-colored roses I had ever seen. While we explored this exotic land together, I learned of a small nonprofit in the midst of expanding. They were finishing up a new building and would need guidance setting up their growing production systems. in addition to adding a clothing line to their store. Almost instantly, the little sprout began to bud. I returned home and began planning my return to that faraway land, and the dream of using my creative skills to serve others blossomed into reality. While my mother had grown a few cut flowers around our home, it was in East Africa that my eyes became open to the wide variety of cut flowers available in the world. As I walked to work each day, I would pass by a flower peddler sitting among buckets of blooms. The temptation to purchase stems for my apartment was strong, bringing back memories of arranging my mother's homegrown blooms for her table. Thankfully, the flowers were inexpensive, and each time I tried my hand at arranging those unique stems, a seed was planted. About 7 months after I moved to the motherland to chase my unconventional design dreams, that farm boy proposed. We planned our wedding across the ocean and were married in late November in my hometown. While having fresh flowers at a big church wedding did not fit the budget, I did my best to source the most realistic-looking faux blooms and enjoyed designing the arrangements. I also designed and sewed my gown and the bridesmaid dresses with the help of the ladies I worked with, and then carried them all home in my backpack for the wedding. This time, tears of joy watered that new seed. We eventually moved back to our home country as our family began. We gave birth to a sweet little girl and settled into a small American mountain town. Sewing continued to be a creative outlet, but when we moved from our rental to our first home, growing flowers became a new adventure. That farm boy was stuck in the office most days, so he loved to have a reason to have his hands in the dirt. He took the lead on the planting while I began to learn the names of all the things he thought he could grow. Oh, let's see. When a cousin offered us the opportunity to take over our family's original homestead, we were overjoyed. New dreams began to surface as we imagined ourselves on land that was both familiar and new. We did not take the responsibility for this legacy lightly and began to dream of ways to carry it forward another 100 years. We dreamt of taking this former dairy farm and creating a place that welcomed others and brought them peace. We brainstormed ideas of combining my designing mind and his farming experience into something that draws our community together. We imagined bringing others the joy of plucking stems straight from a bucket and having them wrapped into a beautiful bouquet. Almost 2 years after that phone call, we said our tear-filled goodbyes to our friends of that season, watering those planted seeds once again. The idea of a flower farm was new to us, but we realized it might be the perfect way to revive this farm. With another baby on the way, we entered the grand experiment in 2017, planting seeds in trays and praying they grew into something we could use. With that baby's birth, a business was born as well, which we aptly named Homeplace Fields. Once flowers began to grow among the weeds, we stood in the field and asked ourselves, now what? I began taking gifts of blooms to local florists and boutiques, and relationships blossomed. Before I knew it, I was loading up buckets of zinnias, cosmos, and snapdragons along with that tiny baby and delivering them all over town. Our church at the time had a flower guild, and something told me I should join. I learned everything I could about arranging flowers from the veterans in the group, while also stretching my wings and trying new ideas. During this time, my dad had passed away, and I found that the time spent in the church arranging Sunday's flowers carried me through my grief. Not long after, we added a little boy to the mix, and a few years later, we adopted a little girl from the country next door to that far-off land we once called home. Our family was growing rapidly, and moving home became the new dream. Our hope of creating a place of peace had sprouted as well. Many visitors have come to the farm and said, "It's so peaceful here." My mom passed away just a couple of years after we moved home to the farm. Spending time tending roses. I'm sorry, I just lost my space for just a minute. Okay. Thank you for your patience. My mom passed away just a couple of years after we moved home to the farm, spending time tending to our rose and lilac bushes, just as we had at my childhood home, brought me peace amid grief. I received a wind chime as a gift while she passed, which now hangs in our heirloom pear tree. It hangs still until I pass by, and then it chimes. Her spirit feels so close, I can almost hear her say, "Hello. I just want you to know I'm proud of what you're growing here." Of the creative jobs I have had thus far, floral design is my favorite. Being able to see the flowers start from seeds and bloom into their potential is the cherry on top. Designing with them in every stage from bud to bloom and passing them on to our customers is a joy. During golden hour in the garden, as the sun glows through the trees and the butterflies dance from petal to petal, certainty washes over me. This is where I'm meant to be. Every seed planted along the way has brought me to this very moment. God has taken my desire to create and brought me closer to His creation. And here are some tips from our author for extending the life of an arrangement. Clean vases with bleach between uses, ensuring that there aren't any leftover bacteria that will shorten the life of the blooms. Remove all leaves that will be below the water level. If the leaves are in the water, they'll break down and they're going to add bacteria to the water, which will in turn shorten their vase life. Keep flowers away from ripening fruit. The fruit will emit gases that will shorten the life of the flowers nearby. And change the water every couple of days and give the stems a fresh cut. Here is an In the Garden piece by Natasha Morgan. I return to myself, little cottage on a hill, Dalesford, Victoria, Australia, is where my life makes the most sense. I have been gardening since I was a small child, when a family friend handed me seeds and said, "Try." That simple invitation became a way of living, and it has followed me through every season of change. This is a productive garden, as I define it. It is food and flowers, scent and shade, soil, life, and the quiet work of tending what sustains us. The day has its own rhythm here. Early morning and late afternoon are when I do my slow circuit, when the light turns golden and the garden shows me what needs refining. In those softer hours, the garden speaks, and I respond with calm, practical steps rooted in the simple seasonal moments the garden shares. This garden holds our whole family. It holds my work, my workshops, and the rhythms of growing, gathering, harvesting, and preserving. It invites conversations and community in the most ordinary and powerful ways. Gardens have also carried me through grief and responsibility, and it remains the place I return to when the world feels loud. Here I can be grounded. Here I can make something that nourishes and inspires, something deeply personal, generous, and authentically real. Here are some tips on gifting a unique bouquet. There's a reason that flowers are given to mark so many of life's important moments, as each stunning bloom can communicate infinite emotions, from celebrating joy and hope to providing a balm for sadness and heartbreak. One can hardly improve upon the beauty of Mother Nature, but sometimes it's fun to shake up a classic with an unexpected touch. The next time you present a loved one with a bouquet, wrap it with something meaningful to the recipient. Many materials can be photocopied first or digitally arranged and then printed, allowing you to preserve the originals. And sometimes cherished items become inevitably damaged by time, so we don't mind repurposing them as something new. Below are some unique bouquet wrapping ideas for the special people and moments in your life. Use pages from a favorite book or a collage of photographs. Use old love letters, fabric scraps from a loved one's clothing, newspaper pages from a specific date, sheet music of a significant song, part of a damaged but cherished handmade quilt, a child's drawing or painting, maps of a hometown or special location, handwritten wedding vows, a family's member's handkerchief. And now another piece from In My Garden. And this is by Erin Lynn. Time has a way of pausing, lingering, and the world seems to fall away. My favorite moments are walking the gardens as the early morning sunrises paint the prairie skies, and during golden hour evenings when the prairie light is magical over the flowers and plants. Our gardens are scattered throughout the farmyard, tucked amongst the barns surrounding our home and next to the fields of wheat and canola. Each garden is different, from thousands of peonies in straight rows to lupins, delphiniums, yarrow, dahlias, roses, shrubs, and annuals, all mixed together in mass plantings, to our farm vegetable garden sheltered by a tree belt. But they all offer the same sense of peace and beauty for our family to enjoy. The wildlife, gardens, and plants all shift with the seasons, offering a gentle reminder to enjoy the beauty of that each day has to offer. But it is in autumn, when all the growing efforts and fall colors of the garden fully come to life. That is my favorite season among the farm's gardens. I want to hold on to the time in the garden, knowing that all too soon they will be covered in a thick blanket of snow until they emerge next April. And with the snow also comes rest and dreaming of the gardens to come in the future. Our next feature is a garden DIY, and this is a way to make wax sachets out of floral flowers, actually. And it's really to preserve the scent, to freshen doors, to give as gifts, that sort of thing. It's an alternative to, for instance, candles, soaps, that kind of thing. Fairly straightforward project. So it's dried floral wax sachets. And this is from Natalie Barnett, who writes for Botanical Anthology magazine. Spring is the perfect time to freshen up your home and bring some lovely natural fragrance and beauty into your space after a long winter. Wax sachets are a wonderful alternative to burning candles or using linen sprays. You do not have to heat these natural air fresheners, and they can be hung or placed throughout your home. Hang one near a smelly pet cage or in closets, in dresser drawers, or even just for a sweet decoration. These also make beautiful gifts. You can customize these wax sachets any way you'd like. Did you press any flowers or herbs from your garden last summer? This is a great way to use them. Okay, here's what you're going to need. You're going to need a baking sheet, some beeswax or soy wax pellets, 2 cups of them, a container with a lid, fragrant dried herbs and flowers, lavender essential oil, 15 drops, a nail, that's optional if you want to hang these, original orange essential oil, 15 drops, a small saucepan, a silicone mold, a spoon and a spatula, string, twine, and ribbon, wax paper, and a wax pitcher. To make, you're going to fill the wax pitcher with the wax pellets and place the pitcher in the center of a small saucepan with a couple of inches of water. You bring the water to a boil over medium heat, and you let the wax completely melt. Wax can burn, so keep an eye on it while it's melting. And when the wax is melted, remove it from the heat and let it sit for a few minutes to start to cool down. Once cool, add the essential oils and stir the wax to distribute the oils. And then place the silicone mold on a baking sheet in case you have to move the warm wax sachets before they're completely solid. And pour the hot wax into the mold, making only 2 at a time so you have time to add the dried herbs and flowers. Very carefully add the dried flowers just as the wax is starting to cool and become slightly cloudy. You want the herbs sitting right on top of the wax, not fall and melt to the bottom of the mold. Work quickly because the wax cools fast. If the wax is too cool and hard, it can be difficult to add the dried florals without the finished product having bumps and lumps. Once the silicone mold is completely filled with wax and decorated with dried florals, let it sit undisturbed for at least 30 minutes. And that is all we have time for today, I am sorry to say. And we'll be back next week. So this is Amy Wentley with the North Carolina Reading Service. We hope you enjoyed listening today, and please join us next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.